Hi, welcome back to, or welcome to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin, and this show, of course, is a show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Now, the chemical pollution crisis in Sungai Kimkim in Johor, which started about last Thursday, has raised a lot of questions about what we understand about safety in industry, as well as the very nature of chemicals used and industrial processes. Now, while this disaster has not been declared a national emergency yet, there's a lot of questions about whether it should be. And the question also of whether we understand enough about what's at stake. Now, help me understand better the nature of chemicals in industrial processes. I have Professor Yang Farina Abdul Aziz. She's at the University of Bangsa Malaysia School of Chemical Sciences. Thank you so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure to learn something about what's happening, because the media is often covering, and there's a lot of hype, and that we have all the images, and it often induces panic in people. And I wonder, you as somebody who knows the field, who knows the substances involved with, the chemicals that are in the river system now there, how do you assess people's reaction to it? I mean, what is it that you're sensing from people?
Okay, number one, I would say fear of the unknown, because they don't understand chemicals and they fear. For example, I had a friend who was asking me, is it going to come here?
To the Klang Valley?
To the Klang Valley, this gas, is it going to come to Klang Valley? So I had to reassure him, it's very much localized, and by the time, with the distance, it's not going to happen. Because you're going to get like air and dilution and all that factor will come in. It's very much a localized event. So that has prompted me to look at it, that people fear chemicals. I mean, even when I go anywhere and I say that I teach chemistry, and people say, ooh, chemistry, chemicals. And I think to be fair to us, if you look at whatever that we do, we have to rely on chemical industry, because it has made our life a lot better, and we cannot not do with it.
Right. I mean, you might actually argue that everything is chemical at some level, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's chemistry in the making of this mug. I mean, in all material is in some sense a chemical, right? But let's look at some of the the big media stories when it comes to chemical disasters. We had the Bhopal Union Carbide disaster, Minamata in Japan, and when we were talking before the show, you told me of Love Canal in New York.
So yes.
Let's talk about Love Canal, because it's got this beautiful name, Love Canal. It should be a pretty story, but it's actually quite tragic.
Tragic story. Love Canal is about this Mr. Love, who decided that he wanted to build a canal so that he could generate hydroelectric power, but he never got around to doing it. So it became like a half-completed canal. So, and then there's industrialization, and they decided to put all their toxic waste into the canal.
Right. So this is the US?
In the United States of America, quite close to where the Niagara Falls area is, but on the United States of America, on the side of the United States. And they closed it up, and later on, they sold the land. Sold the land, and a school was built on top of that, and they had a lot of housing area around that. And later on in the 1970s, I think late 1970s, the problem started because of the leakage of the toxic waste. And there were a lot of school kids coming back with burns on their hands. So that is what I teach my student. I'm saying, like, if you don't handle your chemical or your industrial waste properly, you don't get rid of it properly, this is what's going to happen.
Right.
Not knowing, 2 weeks later, we are seeing, maybe on a smaller scale, we are seeing something like that happening in Malaysia. So it's a very sad tragedy to me.
Okay. So there's several, lessons to be learned from Love Canal for us and the general public to understand the way in which chemicals react. There are issues about how to discard them safely.
Yes.
But there are also issues of leakages, for instance, or the time frame in which people might get ill. People might get ill now. We've seen dozens of people out in Sungai Kimkim, hospitalized or suffering the immediate effects. But there could be long-term effects as well, couldn't there? I mean, and does that all come back to the way in which these chemicals react to human bodies or react on human bodies? What are the chemicals that concern you most in the case of Sungai Kim Kim?
Okay, in the case of Sungai Kim Kim, the minute I see benzene, that's one chemical that we as chemists, we try and avoid at all costs. Why? Because it's a known carcinogen. Yes, cancer causing. People who work with benzene over a long period of time, some of them, they will develop cancer. I had one story, one person actually put it up in my Facebook. Said she had a friend who was working with benzene and she died of cancer later on. So to me, they're all the other chemicals as well. They're also very dangerous. But benzene is something that we as chemists usually, we try and avoid it at all costs because it has two effects. It can cause acute effect, meaning like if you're exposed to it, one-off, at high level, it can kill you. Or maybe you expose it over a longer period of time at lower dosage, it can also what is known as the chronic effect. So this is the long-term effect.
And then that's very interesting. Again, you know, you talk about that exposure because we all get exposed to chemicals. There's pollution everywhere. There's probably particles, all kinds of things in the air that we are exposed to. Doesn't necessarily make us sick, right? Going out into the streets doesn't necessarily give us cancer. Or even exposure, as you said, to benzene might not give you cancer, right? Mm-hmm. So there isn't a one-to-one correspondence. So how do you work it out? What is the science telling us about things like exposure?
Okay. Maybe perhaps I would like to explain a bit about how we actually come up with all these figures and things like that. You know, when you're working with chemicals, you always refer, the first thing that you look at is what is known as the chemical safety data sheet or material safety data sheet. So all the chemicals, they've all got a lot of work has been done to know, for example, what is the exposure that is safe for human being. And they've done all the tests on rats. And so they've got all this and they've studied a lot of cases, you know, like the NIOSH, United States of America, and in Europe. So they study all these figures and that's why they can come up with all these numbers because if you look like you're talking about time-weighted average, you're talking, I see the press release, you know, they've come up with all these numbers. So all these numbers are coming from what is known as the chemical safety data sheet. And they do a lot of work to come up with all these numbers.
Right, so we actually...
So they've been studied.
Right, so the science is quite clear about the levels of risk and so on hazards to human beings in terms of exposure, the various types of exposure. Okay, we'll take a short break and we'll come back and look further into the story of Sungai Kim Kim, but looking from the chemical perspective. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Professor Yang Farina Abdul Aziz with the School of Chemical Sciences at University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. We're talking about what she calls the fear of the unknown. And chemicals, though essential to industrial production, the things that we use all around us, have become a source of fear because of the way in which I think we don't understand enough about the science of chemistry. But before we come back to you, and your fascinating discussions earlier about the way in which we already know what's at stake when we talk about chemicals, the hazards and so on and so forth, we have on the line Prabhakaran S. He's president of the Association of Water Energy Research Malaysia, who's been sort of weighing in on the Sungai Kim Kim issue. Thank you so much for joining us, Prabhakaran. You and your organization put out a statement concerned about issues raised about the cost of the cleanup. And you're saying that, in fact, under Section 47 of the Environmental Quality Act, the Department of Environment is empowered to recover costs and expenses from those who are errant and responsible for this. How do you see that panning out, this issue? Of course, the Johor government says it's going to be spending 6 million ringgit on the cleanup. Is that a final figure, do you think, for this, what we see happening down south?
There are a few things that I should actually ask to amend. When we talk about the cost of cleanup, when a pollution takes place, the chemical is there, the Department of Environment is given the power to actually clear it because we do not want this chemical to be there and giving other unnecessary problems, because when the chemicals start to be mobile, you cannot control where it's going to end up, and most probably it's going to end up in our food chain. So now, once they have taken this action, obviously all this action to clean up will actually work out to be a particular cost. Now, this cost needs to be basically claimed by Department of Environment to those wrongdoers. I mean, the way that this decision is made is that they have made up in their mind that until cows come back home, they wouldn't be able to catch the culprit. I mean, the law gives you the power to recover the cost. You can refer the cost. And to the circumstances, this person doesn't have the cash. You can actually forfeit the properties and so forth. You can declare them bankrupt. There's so many ways, actually, to collect this money. And I think we need to go hard on this issue. On the other part, I think there's a gap also in the recovery of losses. For example, yeah? Now, if a water catchment area where the river is actually used as a raw water for water treatment, if there's a pollution, then you actually have to shut down a treatment plant. Now, when that happens, the water treatment company loses income. The water treatment company sells treated water to the supply company. Then the supply company supplies to the consumers, may it be domestic, industrial, or commercial consumers. Now, when there is a disruption and all these activities are actually disrupted because of water supply, and it's actually caused because of the pollution. Now, we don't have a direct mechanism to actually claim back all these costs, these loss. And since 2011, we have been raising this issue. The part of pollution is covered by DOE, but the part where when a pollution occurs and it impacts other activities, may it be normal activities or economic activity, there is no way that we can actually claim back the losses that is incurred by industries or other economic activities.
Okay, so the thing, of course, is that regardless of whether the government can recover the cost, government is still left holding the baby, as it were, isn't it? I mean, you talk about disruptions to the economy, but there's also the question of health. The health effects and the cost thereof, not just in the immediate, meaning the hospitalization costs and, you know, and the care of that's happening now, but the long-term effects. We don't actually know what the long-term effects are going to be, do we?
Definitely, because now chemicals, once they go into our body, there's no certain when they will actually give you this reaction, number one. Number two, what we are seeing now is airborne part of the chemicals. Those are volatile, they evaporate, and then, you know, they move about to a bigger radius. What about the actual area of incident where it's actually inside a river? The water is mobile. Now, these chemicals are moving from the point of incident to downstream. And there are a lot of soil where it's going to get absorbed into. And, you know, along the way of the river, you have aquatic animals. You also have plants and so forth. So there will be some form of chemicals being absorbed. So it's not just about now we're cleaning it up. How are we going to monitor the after effect of this particular incident? We need to take what they call groundwater samples. We need to take soil samples. We need to take all these plant and aquatic animal samples to actually monitor what's happening. On the other part, the children and also adults who are exposed to this, we also need to monitor their health. Just like what happened in Fukushima after the nuclear reactor exploded, and there's also some other leakages issue in 2011. Now, the children actually have developed a thyroid gland enlargement, which is actually an indicator of the possible or potential cancer. And they need to go through health tests, health screening every 2 years when they are young, below teenagers' age, and when they're in teenagers' age, every 5 year one. So these are things I think we have to establish. And this is actually a cost.
Right. Thank you very much. That was Prabhakaran S., President of the Association of Water Energy Research in Malaysia. Laying out actually the reality, right? So it seems like the government is left holding the baby. The community is left holding the baby. We'll have to take responsibility, regardless of who are the culprits. The culprits could be punished. But everybody takes responsibility when we don't manage environmental and industrial issues properly. Do you teach these issues? I mean, how to... Because big-scale industry, you know, we transport chemicals across, you know, great distances and so forth. There could be spills, there could be accidents. Huge issues, right, involved in industry and chemicals.
Okay. Yes, there are issues, but if you handle it, if you manage it properly, it's not an issue.
Right.
Okay, the problem now, what we are seeing is an industry which is not, they have not been doing things in the correct way. We do have laws, we have very, very good laws, very clear things that needs to be done. For example, like they knew these are all scheduled waste, and under the Environmental Quality Act 1974, there are a few regulations pertaining to scheduled waste. And they know that they have to dispose of the scheduled waste in a proper manner. They cannot just be putting it into drums and pouring it into the river. I'm sure they know about this. But
so is this a question of a failure of enforcement? So we have good laws?
In a way, I would say yes as well. Because if you're looking at the big organisation, it's not a problem. They have what we call ISO 14000 Environmental Management Plan. They have all the management system in place. But when you're talking about small and medium scale, then this is where the problem is going to start.
Right, small businesses,
yes,
or little factories,
yes,
some of them illegal.
Illegal,
maybe.
Suddenly you hear it's an illegal factory, and I think about a few years ago when we had problem with Sungai Semenye treatment plant, again it's illegal factory. Now, where does all this illegal factory is coming from? They
and
have
surely,
to be there.
Yeah, surely enforcement
yes,
officers can see them, right?
Yes. So, how do you... Okay, problem now. How do you engage them? How do you regulate them? Because it's going to involve costs. And there's going to be people working there. You know, if you take away their jobs, they're not going to be happy with us. They say, oh, you've taken away my job. So, how do you actually regulate them and make sure that they do things in a safe manner?
Okay, that's a good question for the next segment. We're going to come back. I'm speaking to Professor Young Farin Abdulaziz from UKM. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Reality, right? So it seems like the government is left holding the baby. The community is left holding the baby. We'll have to take responsibility, regardless of who are the culprits. The culprits can be punished, but everybody takes responsibility when we don't manage environmental and industrial issues properly. Do you teach these issues? I mean, how to... Because big-scale industry, you know, we transport chemicals across, you know, great distances and so forth. There could be spills, there could be accidents. Huge issues, right, involved in industry and chemicals.
Okay. Yes, there are issues, but if you handle it, if you manage it properly, it's not an issue.
Right.
Okay, the problem now, what we are seeing is an industry which is not, they have not been doing things in the correct way. We do have laws, we have very, very good laws, very clear things that needs to be done. For example, like they knew these are all scheduled waste, and under the Environmental Quality Act 1974, there are a few regulations pertaining to scheduled waste. And they know that they have to dispose of the scheduled waste in a proper manner. They cannot just be putting it into drums and pouring it into the river. I'm sure they know about this. But
so is this a question of a failure of enforcement? So we have good laws?
In a way, I would say yes as well. Because if you're looking at the big organisation, it's not a problem. They have what we call ISO 14000 Environmental Management Plan. They have all the management system in place. But when you're talking about small and medium scale, then this is where the problem is going to start.
Right, small businesses,
yes,
or little factories,
yes,
some of them illegal.
Illegal,
maybe.
Suddenly you hear it's an illegal factory, and I think about a few years ago when we had problem with Sungai Semenye treatment plant, again it's illegal factory. Now, where does all this illegal factory is coming from? They have to be there.
Yeah, surely enforcement officers can see them, right?
Yes. So how do you... Okay, problem now. How do you engage them? How do you regulate them? Because it's going to involve costs. And there's going to be people working there. You know, if you take away their jobs, they're not going to be happy with us. They say, oh, you've taken away my job. So how do you actually regulate them and make sure that they do things in a safe manner?
Okay, that's a good question for the next segment. We're going to come back. I'm speaking to Professor Yang Farin Abdulaziz from UKM. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Professor Yang Farin Abdulaziz with the School of Chemical Sciences at the UKM. We're talking about the lessons we can learn from the Sungai Kim Kim tragedy. A tragedy because many people are in hospital, some violently sick, and we don't know actually the long-term prospects for their health either. That's something that clearly will have to be monitored. Professor, there are issues. There's the cleanup issue that we were talking about. There's the constant monitoring of the environment and health of individuals. And we ended with you saying we need to engage with the small and medium-sized factories, the illegal factories, get them on board, and find ways, some practical solutions to the issues around cost, because many times safety features in industrial productions are costly. Right? Yes. I mean, how do we get away from that? I mean, are there real ways in which we can move forward?
Okay, the way to move forward, I think I'm also on behalf of Institut Kimia Malaysia, we are doing something about this. In the sense that we are coming up with a chemistry standard, a curriculum that will be taught in all universities, because no matter whatever the factory is, they need to employ someone. They need to employ a chemist, they need to employ someone who understands the processes and everything. And we've really, what we are insisting, or the industry is saying, that we need to emphasize on the safety management of chemicals. So that will be something that is compulsory.
I want to ask you about this. Yeah. You know, there's this thing that the people around that area, along this river, had been smelling things. That they'd already sensed that something was wrong. Is it that the general public just doesn't know when or how to identify what's going on in the environment? You know, that if they knew this was chemical pollution, they would have acted maybe beyond complaining or done something. I mean, whose responsibility is it to identify what's going wrong in the environment?
Oh, very tough question. Because when you're talking about, let's say, in your housing area, the people who are very, very close to you will be the Kerajaan Tempatan, you know?
The local council.
Local council.
Right.
So that will be your first... the people that you complain to.
And do they have the wherewithal? Do they know how to monitor? Do they know how to... You know, because people say, oh, bad smell happens, maybe the wind turns the other direction, oh, it's okay, you know?
No, of course, they don't know how to monitor, but definitely they have to perhaps go to Jabatan Alam Sekitar to come and get it checked and see whether the air quality is healthy or not. But I would say, to me, if you were to ask me, I would say the Kerajaan Tempatan, you have councillors now for every, I'm not too sure about Johor Bahru or in Johor, but in Selangor, or the area that I live in, we've got a person that is representing us. So if you have any complaints whatsoever, we go to this person.
And they're responsive.
They are the one, yes. The ones that we have so far, this is like in Sepang, very responsive, whatever problems that we have. Recently, we had a storm. They came over, cleared everything for us. So I would say these are the person who is actually in touch with the people on the ground.
Right, the front line for getting an appropriate response.
Yes.
Now, you know, I do think that, you know, often when we talk about Bhopal and Love Canal, these are all the big stories, right? But for the most part, 99% of the industry chugs along safely, doing things in a proper way, and we don't have problems, right? So it's these minority, these moments, these odd moments where we are actually reminded of how dangerous industry can be if not well regulated.
Yes. I have to mention, not all small and medium scale industry do things in not a proper manner. Recently, we had this paint company who came to us. They are in Bandar Baru Bangi. They engaged us, you know, because they said they're worried about their wastewater, whether it's adhering to the standard. You see, they want to do things in the proper manner. So there is a change, you know. You don't have like everybody's like trying to cut corners and things like that, but you do have people who are trying to do things in the correct manner, because to them this is the way forward for this country. You have to do things in the proper manner.
Do we give enough support to small and medium-sized enterprises so that they can comply? I mean, is there a way in which government can, you know, help manage the cost issue? Because the long-term cost for government is that they do something that pollutes the environment, and the government is left holding,
the baby,
right? The yes, proverbial yes. baby for the next 20 years, yes, people yeah. getting sick and so on and so forth. So how can we manage that issue? Do you think, in your experience, that we give enough support to small and medium-sized enterprises to, in fact, comply with regulations?
So I think maybe perhaps this is the way that I see it, this company in Bandar Baru Bangi. So perhaps if they engage like a local, we are the university closest to them that can help solve their problem. So I think whatever money that they spend on engaging us, that should be deducted from the tax.
Oh, it could be a tax deduction.
It can be, that is one way that you can give incentive to the industry to do things in a safe manner. Because I'm sure they want to improve. They cannot be doing things that way. I'm sure they want to be doing things, improve on it, you know, because...
You believe in the essential goodness of people,
yes,
do you?
Yes, yes.
Okay, I want to ask you, do universities and institutions like yours have a role as well, I mean, in terms of outreach, so that, you know, universities located where they are could actually go to industries, you know, do your students go out and monitor the environment to look at issues like this?
Oh, yes, 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 we do. Definitely, because I think, like our students, they offer placement for the students, and this is one way forward that we can actually do the work with all these small, medium-scale industries, you know, to help solve the problem for them. And I was very, very impressed with this company. It's a paint company, and they were very, very, like, very worried about whether the quality of their treated water meets up to the standard that is required. So they want us to have a look and offer suggestion to them.
Okay, paint companies. We all love to paint our houses and make it look fresh, but it is the toxic chemicals, aren't they, involved in paints?
Well, not necessarily. I learned that now there's what is known as the green paint.
The green paint?
Yes, the green. It's supposed to be environmentally friendly. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Yes. And finally, just a quick thought on the role of the media. Do you think the media has been playing a positive role? Have they made people panic, or have they actually helped raise awareness?
No, they've not. I would say they've helped to raise awareness, and also through Facebook, social media. I think a lot of people were asking me questions, and a lot of discussion, not just within the people that is in social media, but also discussion in within the academic fraternity, you know. All of us were talking about this Sungai Kim Kim, trying to figure out where is this methane coming from, why is it taking, like, it's got all these waves, you know, and we're discussing it in our classrooms as well with our students. So, in a way, I would say social media as well as the mainstream media have played a positive role in educating the people. I'm here now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to thank you for being here.
Yes.
We've come to the end of the show. We'll probably have to get you back on again to look at some of the long-term issues. Thank you so much again.
Okay, thank you, Shah.
I've been speaking to Professor Yang Farina Abdul Aziz from the School of Chemical Sciences at University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. This has been Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin, only on Astro Wani. We'll be right back.
I would say social media as well as the mainstream media have played a positive role in educating the people. I'm here now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to thank you for being here.
Yes.
We've come to the end of the show. We'll probably have to get you back on again to look at some of the long-term issues. Thank you so much again.
Okay, thank you, Shah.
I've been speaking to Professor Yang Farina Abdul Aziz from the School of Chemical Sciences at University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. This has been Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin, only on Astro Wani. Go to industries, do your students go out and monitor the environment to look at issues like this?
Oh, yes, we do. Definitely, because I think, like our students, they offer placement for the students, and this is one way forward that we can actually do the work with all these small, medium-scale industries, to help solve the problem for them. And I was very, very impressed with this company. It's a paint company. And they were very, very, very worried about whether the quality of their treated water meets up to the standard that is required. So they want us to have a look and offer suggestion to them.
Okay, paint companies, we all love to paint our houses and make it look fresh, but it is the toxic chemicals, aren't they, involved in paints?
Well, not necessarily. I learned that now there's what is known as the green paint.
The green paint.
Yes, the green is supposed to be environmentally friendly. So, we'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yes.
And finally, just a quick thought on the role of the media. Do you think the media has been playing a positive role? Have they made people panic or have they actually helped raise awareness?
No, they've not. I would say they've helped to raise awareness and also through Facebook, social media. I think a lot of people were asking me questions and a lot of discussion, not just within the people that is in social media, but also discussion in within the academic fraternity. All of us were talking about this Sungai Kim Kim, trying to figure out where is this methane coming from, why is it taking it's got all these waves, and we are discussing it in our classrooms as well with our students. So in a way, I would say social media as well as the mainstream media have played a positive role in educating the people. I'm here now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to thank you for being here.
Yes.
We've come to the end of the show. We'll probably have to get you back on again to look at some of the long-term issues. Thank you so much again.
Okay, thank you, Shah.
I've been speaking to Professor Yang Farina Abdul Aziz from the School of Chemical Sciences at University Kebangsaan, Malaysia. This has been Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin, only on Astro Wani.